Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 416's After Show.
It's official. It's the After Show.
Here we are in the after show.
Time to get relaxed.
Yeah. So the after show, if somehow you're new here, can be disco related or more likely some of our live chatters have submitted some few conversation pieces or topics that they would like us to either answer or expand upon. Or sometimes it can just somewhat get off the rails into anything that comes to mind for Johnny V or myself. So if you got sweet after show topics that you want to bring, feel free.
Ray brought up one during the show.
Okay.
How come Ledgestone gets to be an Elite Series event when there are nine holes we can't cover? And we look at some of the other events like Masters Cup and Beaver State. They don't get to be Elite Series events.
Okay. Fair.
I think
fair
it's a
question.
Fair question. You want me to answer?
I don't care.
So
you or I.
I mean, there's a lot of there's probably a lot of reasons. One, Nate Heinold. He raises a lot of money. His event has the biggest purse. He is a longtime member of the Elite Series events and Disc Golf Pro Tour. We have two courses, so 36 holes, and only, I'm going to throw that in quotes, nine of them can't be covered. And things are getting better. We actually had a lot, when the nine holes were not being covered, we did have a camera live on them, so we could watch them from the control room. And for the most part, some of them were okay. There were, I would say, two holes, maybe three, that were virtually uncoverable just because of how deep they get into the woods and how low it gets. And so it just wouldn't work for those particular holes. Why isn't Beaver State Fling and Masters Cup on the Elite Series? That I don't know. Masters Cup is difficult to cover. So it's, you know, and again, things change every year. Next year we could go out and do tests and, oh, look, they put up a new tower. And things could work out. But not being able to cover any holes or even a third of them kind of eliminates you from being that. And that's the way Masters Cup has been. Beaver State Fling this past year, we were able to cover a handful.
The whole
course,
round.
The whole course side of the course, basically the west course.
One of the two courses.
Yeah, I think the east course was not coverable. So, that's kind of what it breaks down to. I mean, ultimately, we would love nothing more at Ledge. Well, we're going to get real here, folks. from the control room's perspective, we would love nothing more than to never cover Northwood again. Ever. Not one single hole on that course, because it's a 5.5 hour round of backups. That's why. That's from the control room perspective. It's a great course. It is an elite course. It is a difficult course. Players like it. Control room hates it. It's hiking up and down these giant, up and down these hills and in the woods. And it's usually hot and muggy. And our cameramen, it's difficult to cover because players go all over that course. They kick to every single direction. So even if you had three cameras on every player, I still think you would miss shots because of just how difficult it is live. So as from a control room perspective, I would love it if we never set foot on that course again. And there's some of it we can't cover. If I was a player, I would be upset if that course wasn't on the tour, because I think it's a very good course that challenges almost every aspect of your game, physically, mentally, and skill-wise. So I'm going to throw both of those things out. But yeah, that's what it comes down to. It comes down to a lot of Nate Heineld, I think, being a huge supporter of the tour from day one, being a huge fundraiser on the tour for charity, having some great courses out there. The players like them. I don't know about Eureka personally. It plays pretty well, covers pretty well. I don't know what the players really think about it because I haven't really talked to them, but everyone seems to talk to them about Northwood Black, and a lot of players say they love it. So I don't know the good answer to that, Ray, I don't have an exact answer to that.
Yeah, and I can't really add too much more to it.
That's right.
It's one of the most revered and now liked courses from a competitor standpoint. So to not have it as part of the event almost seems absurd. However, it does feel weird that we... it doesn't feel weird. That's not the right word. It's just unfortunate that the lack of cellular service is what prevents us from being there. Now, maybe other alternatives will be discovered. Maybe there, you know, are ways that a lot more money could be spent to potentially get more extensive coverage on that course. I often think about it in terms of just great courses in general. When you think about where you're going to find the best course and the best property for a course, it's usually going to be outside of town, off the beaten path. I mean, you know, you could say that about most private facilities. And although Morton is not private, but it's outside of Peoria, it's a little bit off the beaten path, and it just happens to be in a place where the cellular signal is terrible. Mm-hmm. And it does bring up a much bigger overarching question of what's required of being on a course on the tour. The Disc Golf Pro Tour from day one, thankfully for Johnny and I, has been all about live. And that was something that set the Disc Golf Pro Tour apart from the National Tour or really any other big events that were taking place, is that there was essentially a guarantee of live coverage.
And let me say this. If it came down to it, and we've had this discussion, if the Pro Tour said, hey guys, there is a phenomenal A1 5-star event, but it can't be covered live, what do you guys think? I would 100% say, make it on the tour. Are they great fundraisers?
Yeah.
Like, personally, I think that the quality of the course is more important than the live coverage, because we have other ways to cover. We can do post-production and such like that, but that is not how the tour has been established and built. And look back, I know a lot of people complain that like the sport feels like it's going to a more ball golf friendly, wide open, good cellular, spectator friendly. That might be true. I don't think it's really shifted that much. But, I mean, the Pro Tour is responsible for some huge growth in the sport. Not all of it, but a lot of it is focused on our pro players and the interest level that they have. And I think it's helped out, as well as pandemic and this and that. as well as post-production, all that stuff helps out. So whatever the Pro Tour is doing right now, it's working. And so I trust them. They had the vision of, you know, they gave away free Final Day Live, which people thought was nuts. People thought it should be reversed. That should be the one day it should be behind pay-per-view. And they're making great decisions right now that could change in a heartbeat. They could make a decision tomorrow. We could all turn around and be like, what are you thinking? But much like I said always about Steve Dodge, I trust the guy because he has really good ideas. And I always like Steve Dodge as a person. So that helped out quite a bit. So
that's a hill.
That is a hill to die on. Trust me. And Steve Dodge knows it.
So just to follow that up, well, a couple of things. One, you wouldn't believe the amount of restraint, and I will pat myself on the back for this, how I managed to not go off on everyone. I started to wonder if we have a reading problem in our country, and then I thought, no, that's not fair, and clearly I'm not attacking anyone that is truly illiterate. But then I was going to revamp that to say, okay, we have clearly a comprehension problem. And I'm not ripping on anyone that has any form of learning disability or skillful disability or learned skill disability. But the amount of times and places that it was posted and published and announced and blasted out there, the game plan for the coverage in terms of coming in roughly at hole 10... Like
we talked about it on the podcast last week. But here, I've said this before as well. The Pro Tour has a communication problem. Because whatever they post on social media, as far as information, I don't want every picture on there. As far as information should be fed to the website. I should be able to go to the Pro Tour website and look at a feed of information that tells me. I want to be able to go to the website and go, who's our feature cards this week? I know there's a schedule as far as when it starts, but that doesn't tell me what hole they're starting on. And not that you have to assume, because, hey, guess what? It's starting at 9:30 versus 11. They must be coming in at 9. But, and maybe they had it for this, because I haven't looked at the Pro Tour website in probably 2 to 3 weeks. Maybe there was an informational shout out on the webpage, but I do feel that the Pro Tour has some communication issue when it comes to putting information on the website. They blast it all over social media, every social media you can imagine: Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, MySpace, Tinder, Grindr. It's they're all over. I know the Pro Tour; they're everywhere,
and I know where you are.
But I do feel like there's a slight lack sometimes on the actual website. Like,
I don't know. I see an article. Ledgestone kicks off final push to Worlds. You click on the article. It then brings you to the PDGA, but it's still the click from that page.
Sure.
Where it goes on to say, I'll read verbatim.
Yep.
There will be two broadcast times for each division this weekend due to cell signal issues on the front nine at Northwood.
And this is
coverage
good.
Will begin 2 hours late on those days, beginning with the high. The problem is people just don't want to read.
Correct. I give them props for this. Because this has not always been the case, because there have been times I've looked. So huge props to the Pro Tour for putting that out there and easy to find. The problem is some people, as dumb as it is, don't know where to look. And that's on them. Like that, if I was looking for Pro Tour information, I would go to the Pro Tour site. But as mm-hmm. I said, sometimes I've gone there and there hasn't been information. I've had to dig up old, like, oh, like, whoa, did they post that on Facebook or was that on Instagram where I saw that information? Like, I've had to do that in the past.
I understand that, but
for this, mad props to the Pro Tour for
having far off there. From me feeling like at one point this weekend, I felt like I could fly to every subscriber's house, knock on their front door and say,
yeah, that's
hey, it's starting late due to poor cell signal. And I swear 3 seconds later, it'd be like, huh? What time is it on? Like, I get it. I understand, and I know I get this too. I'm very much in the know.
Yep.
I'm an insider here. Blah. I understand that as well. But by golly, there is some comprehension problems out there that I just... And it's truly no different than what we faced for many years when you're in the middle of the FPO broadcast and it's when does MPO start? And like, that's kind of the running, almost a running joke of like, let's ask that question 600 times when it's also posted in like 300 places. Right.
You can always, and this is another thing I love the Pro Tour about, as much as people complain about when it starts, their schedule on the website will tell you start times every single event. I mean, probably every day, even what time the event starts at, whether, because usually for FPO, it's 9 or 9:30. For MPO, it's either 3 or 3:30 local time. But it can vary. You know, at one point, I think we had to start at 9:15 one morning for some reason. But yes, the Pro Tour's website for the schedule has been phenomenal.
All right. At any rate, yes, this is generally an anomaly, this event. Is there going to be changes, provisions, new scenario next year? That's above our pay grade. We can't answer that question, but regardless of what's happening, we'll do our best to make sure that everybody knows. Now, a few people have asked why do we not just sit on hole 10 and watch every group come through, you know, spread the love, whatever you want to call it, even though I'm pretty certain the first thing you'd see posted 300 times would be, where are we watching just hole 10? Like, I hate to get worked up, but I know that's the first, like, 200 comments. Where are we watching any other division? Kelvin Heimberg, 6-under through 7. Why aren't we on hole 7 watching Kelvin Heimberg right now?
There are other logistical...
Sometimes you can't win.
Oh, no.
Maybe
no,
that's
no.
what I'm saying.
No, you can't. If you do something, somebody will complain about it and find a reason. So, but here's what I'll say about the other logistics for Ledgestone, which make things difficult. When Northwood is played in the afternoon and your morning round is sunset, it's what, a 45-minute drive between the two of them?
Roughly.
So not only do you have to get the when the round ends at 1:30 for women, you need to get all of your stuff packed up. I'm just talking production-wise. All of this stuff packed up in the van. The van has to drive all the way over to the event, 45 minutes. The guys have to have a break to eat and refresh. Batteries need... I mean, I think we're pretty much past most time batteries needing to be charged. I think we have enough of them, but they are. They're plugged in. They're charged. Everything. Like, if you started at 3:30, you're barely scraping by.
Yeah.
So, in general, like, it can be done... but it's not ideal. So none of the people on site complained about having to start later. It gave them extra time to get that stuff in. But that's also a logistical issue, is that we've seen that. We had that issue before the most recent iteration of the Pro Tour, with all the camera guys having to have that issue when it was just a small crew. It's extremely difficult because some of those courses are very spread out. So there's also that logistics issue of getting everybody on site, getting them where they need to be, getting them started. Why don't we just show another group on through hole 10, like start 9 through 18 and then wrap back around to 9 or something? I don't know. There's people involved and people need breaks and this and that. It's not like they get to, you know, sometimes when the women finish at 1:30 and the guys just have lunch on site because someone ordered in lunch, they can sit and eat and relax and take a break. They don't have to move anything. Everything sits there and then they can get back out there. It's not easy. It's not an easy job, and I do not envy them. So ultimately, who knows what we'll see next year, but keep going. So Ray says, much better lighting tonight, Johnny. You look better. Here's what I'm going to say about the lighting. I'm still a little Simpson-y yellow, but whatever. Part of it is my shirt. It's blue and not black. So the color in this webcam helps out. Part of it is Terry, because now it has something else to color adjust to other than just my pasty face. Because the lights are a touch brighter and it's the same blue light over my head that helps out quite a bit. So honestly, the lights are almost no different than they were last week. It's just a situational... when Terry's in there, like I said, if I do this, I cover up two lights and I'm not even covering them up. I'm literally like 2 feet away from them. You know, color gets a little bit better and it brightens up a little bit, but I mean, it's honestly very much the webcam and the mediocre lens and stuff that's in it. It's a good webcam. It's just webcams in general are kind of mediocre and we need a better background. I've been saying it for a long time. I'm working on And when I say I'm working on it, I mean, it's in on the list of things I'm going to be working on sometime. So if we're lucky, that,
when he says working on spring, it, that's not active.
That's not active working on it. That's like planning.
That's just that, mentioning it every
that's
few months.
That's mentioning it that I'm going to be doing it because I've got other things in front of that that need to be done. So, yeah. So skin color and clothing changes make a huge difference. That's right. I just need to not wear a black shirt because, like I said, I'm already super white. Like white.
Mm-hmm.
like
David John says the Disc Golf Network does not work like YouTube, and I can only get one subject. Only one subject instead of everything. Living abroad, if I pause, the late stream ends. Yeah, you're right. It's not
30 minutes.
Yeah, it's not entirely like the way a live stream works on YouTube. We understand that. It's just the platform right now.
Tech Talk with Johnny here. You now spread the word. 30 minutes. That's as far as behind as you can be.
That will build up to 30 minutes.
No, we are keeping the broadcast active for 30 minutes after the show ends. So the last putt drops. We have about 10 to 15 minutes of OTB stuff, mm-hmm. OTB after show. And then we keep it going for 30 minutes. At 30 minutes, we cut the show. When we cut the show, as everybody knows, your stream ends. So if you're further behind than that, I would say, I want to say 30 minutes. 30 minutes will get you to the end of the show. 45 might get you to the last putt.
Mm.
So do not get further behind than about 30 minutes or you run the risk of being cut off. This is new as of Ledgestone that we've been trying this. So it was suggested to us on YouTube and the first thing or on Reddit. The first thing I said was, cool, I can't wait for the guy who's 40 minutes behind to complain. And Mo just said, this is going to help a non-zero number of people. Let's do it. And it doesn't hurt us. There's nothing. There's nothing that's...
There's nothing?
There's no...
So you extending that and then ending it after 30 minutes, doesn't that then delay the overall render of that back nine?
It will delay. So we do separate streams. We do a live stream, which it will delay the rendering of the live stream, the full live stream. But we also do what we call chunks. So we have a front nine and a back nine chunk that are separate broadcasts. So we stop those, and those can begin transcoding immediately. But the full live broadcast from 1 to 18 with no break, that will be delayed. But the break one we have from 1 to 9, then... ish, nine-ish. Sometimes we do 10, sometimes we do 11. Depends if we remember, sometimes we forget. And then from 10 to 18, live broadcast. Those will start transcoding immediately. But all I'm going to say, spread the word 30 minutes. If anyone complains about that, shove it in their face and say you have now have 30 minutes. And this might... Tosi's going to be mad at me because I'm spilling some beans. This might not be a problem next year. We are researching. When I say we, I have nothing to do with this. The other people are doing this. Researching options, whether that's a different provider, whether that's a different system with Vimeo, this and that. There are other things. The Pro Tour is always looking to improve. And it might cost more money, but they understand. And I guarantee you, there'll be different problems because no system is perfect. So we'll get on a new system next year or the year after, and suddenly the greens won't be as green and people will complain about it. Or it'll make Terry look 50 pounds lighter and everyone will be like, hey.
Yes, that boy works out.
Suddenly we're going to be able to transpose Terry's head on Ezra's body and everyone's going to be happy.
They're going to be like, that makes sense.
Like, wow, that's clearly right. I mean, look at that guy's.
How's it been so wrong for so many years?
I don't understand how this works. But yes, they're always looking at other options. So we are not 100% tied to Vimeo, but if that's the best option, if we look at all the solutions, they may stay there. They may move. I don't know. So just know that the research is out there. Ray brought up a question earlier today or earlier in the show that said the live broadcast has 100,000 views. The Jomez broadcast of the lead card has 150,000 for the front and back. Is live slowly pushing out post-production? I don't think there's exact words, but,
no.
but close.
No.
Or becoming the preferred method.
Poll 10 people and
you'll get 9 different answers.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and there's, I'm not even going to get too far into this other than there's going to be people that will never watch live. And that's great. That's fine. I'm not mad at you. There'll be people that will never watch post. It's great. I ain't mad at you. I don't care. There's people that watch some and then go back and watch post, whether it's because they like the commentary, they like certain graphics, they feel like there's something that was missed, or they just really want to rewatch it again, but in a shorter capacity. That's fine too. I think you're going to continue to see live become more and more popular. And will we ever get rid of post production? No. The answer is no.
No.
And I can't say that enough. I think it's always going to have a value. Now, will people find less value in it? That's possible.
I do think that live is finally eating into post production views.
It quite possibly could.
Yeah. I don't think it's huge amounts, but I do believe that with the product that the Pro Tour is putting out, that it is definitely eating into some of post-production lead card, because everybody knows that if you want the whole story, you go to live. If you want the lead card story, you go to, you know, if you just want the lead card in post-production, a better video quality, tighter times, you go to post-production.
Yeah, and Mike Jewell makes a great point. There's going to be players who, when looking for something in particular, whether it's to learn what Macbeth threw on hole 9, because they're super concerned about that and somehow think that's going to help their game. Maybe it will. It won't, but let's say it does. You want that, or you want to know how a course plays. You're going to play Northwood Black next week because that's where there's a high school reunion or your family reunion in that area, and you can sneak away for 9 hours to go get around it at Northwood Black, and you're like, hey, I want to go play that course. And you're like, I don't know, should I play Northwood Black from the shorts and shoot 100 over, or should I play Northwood Black from the longs and shoot 200 over? Whatever the case might be, Northwood Black is a tough course. So there's tons of applications for why you will always continue to see post. As someone who also produces post, which is a great segue here in a moment, it's always going to be there, and it's always going to be relevant and great. Will we find more people consuming live? As you just said, when you're looking for a more complete story, you're going to get one in live, and that might be just that could be literally any round. And what we mean by that is clearly if the lead card is doing their thing, but there's 3 other people lighting it up on chase or third card during that final round, next thing you know, we're watching more action from other cards, depending on how close it is. Like, you're going to get more shots per broadcast and per minute when you're watching that, and you're going to get a greater variety other than just the 4 players. You're going to lose some other things, but you're going to gain more variety. That's a guarantee. Because we're going to always show the lead card action, but then we're going to probably show more in addition to that.
Yeah, I mean,
rarely, unless the lead card has fully separated themselves and there's really no likely chance.
No, I was saying if for instance, it was a pretty tight round, final round, and normally the way the camera works is traditionally 3 cameras on lead card, 2 on chase, 1 as a roaming camera that can go to whoever's not on one of those cards shooting hot or well for filler material. If the chase card took off and the lead card was lagging, let's say there's only 1 player on the lead card that's still in contention because everybody else is chundering, I believe is the term that was used this weekend, we would push cards off of that lead card right to the chase in a heartbeat. We would go 1 or 2 on lead, 3 on chase, because we don't care about the cards. Honestly, if Gannon Burr is suddenly 15 over par on the lead card, we would do everything in our power to not show him unless he had a phenomenal shot. Now, in disc golf, it's tough because the way that the the tees are. People get up and come on right away. But you'll see it all the time. If we're on another card, a player will throw, start to walk off. Another player will walk on, and we'll cut the shot. Done. We've done that on lead card. We've skipped shots on lead card because someone just doesn't matter anymore. Congratulations, you're five off the lead after five holes. If we can not show an approach, or sometimes, although it's rare, not show their drive, we'll do it. Our goal isn't to show every shot. Our goal is to show every relevant shot. So that's kind of the mentality that we have. And I think everyone here knows that because we've talked about it before.
Yeah, and someone else brought up a point on the internet, on the Facebooks the other day, saying, hey, I really wish we would have seen more from so-and-so. And, you know, person X is lighting it up and they're on the sixth card. If it's the last round, and unless they're making a legitimate push for the win, which podium. Is still even tough, or maybe podium.
Push for podium is kind of what
and they're having a record-setting round. You think of maybe Macbeth, Champions Cup kind of thing. Like, then maybe. But when someone's still nine strokes off the pace and doesn't have a really legitimate chance, it doesn't make sense, especially on the final day, I should say, to then pull a resource from the lead card to then go follow person X having the round of their life, which is awesome for them. But unfortunately, if they have no chance to find the podium or to win, that's not going to be part of our story. And the problem is you're the biggest fan of person X, or person X is your niece or nephew or uncle or godmother, whatever. I get that you want to see them, but that's just not how this works.
Disc Blaster says, hot take. Post-production needs to stop showing putts inside 20 feet and needs to show more than one card. That's tough. Now, if you ask post-production, I'm sure they would love it if they could show more than one card. Jomez has done that. They've paid for footage from Gatekeeper, and they've kind of done a check-in on the second card. But these teams all have rights to their individual cards. So it doesn't necessarily advantage Gatekeeper to give Jomez footage, just like it wouldn't necessarily. If the second card all made a run, like I said, and the first card only had one player that was in contention, does it advantage Jomez to give their footage to sell their footage to Gatekeeper? It would depends on the price. So to show more than one card is difficult. And it's honestly, in post-production, I think it's more difficult storytelling than it is live.
Far more.
It's like to weave that in more likely. Now, Jomez has done a good job of doing some of their check-ins with some of the shots. And I think it can be done. We just haven't seen a great effort in it yet. Now, cutting out 20-foot putts, I don't agree with that. I think that's a little far. 10-foot in. I think we've all kind of, in the production room, you'll see us now more and more just cut away from tap-ins. Anything like 10 feet and in now, we're all kind of just saying, cool, let's move on. Let's get the next shot in. I don't need to see Matty O put in a 10 foot. As entertaining as Matty O is, when he says Hail Saban and gives the first down marker after he puts in a 10 footer, unless it's like a cool birdie putt, like someone had just had an amazing shot and we want to kind of complete that feeling. If there's like three putts around 10 feet, and we have something else to show, we're just going to cut out. Now, if someone, we haven't been burned by it yet with someone like dinking or doinking a 10 footer, it's going to happen. And then we'll have to go back and show like, oh my gosh, look what happened here. So-and-so lost a stroke because we cut away. It'll happen at some point. But these guys, these 10 footers, they're automatic. They're almost as guaranteed as a 2-footer. So we're doing our best now to start cutting out tap-ins to go to other things. So,
right. So I want to quickly touch on some post-production. I've kind of hinted about these things and probably all but said it, if not directly. So I quickly do want to say I've teamed up with a couple of other guys that are going to help out in this scenario. But this weekend, Friday through Sunday, the 19th through the 21st, the Capital Disc Open presented by Discraft and Upper Park will be covered and assembled and put together and then released on the Disc Golf Guy channel. So Super excited to work with Capital Dis and with Jeremy and the crew over there, but it will be covered. I will not physically be there. I will be in Bend, Oregon doing commentary along with Nate and Val, but the Capital Dis Open will be covered this weekend. I think they've already put together a feature card for the first round, but there's also going to be a skins match that takes place on Thursday, and then one round Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's an A tier. It's a B tier with a ton of added cash, all these great sponsors, lots of good stuff that's taking part in New York. So I just wanted everybody to know that that's happening. Originally, they had planned for it to be a few weeks later, I think right after the MVP weekend, but due to some scheduling conflicts, they switched it, lost a little bit of their star power in terms of the players, but they still have like 230 or something like that, a ton of players, including 74 open players. So we will be getting that covered. So I wanted to make sure everybody knows about that. And also,
yes,
the weekend after Worlds, Altair Bear here will be in Sweden. And I'm excited to cover an event there. It's on the Swedish Pro Tour. It's been something that's been in the works, and I've kind of hinted at it as well for a number of months now, but super excited to be there. So almost directly after the World Championships, I'm going to be heading to Sweden to help with some post-production coverage there. So
rough. Must be rough.
It will be, actually. 10 hours in a plane. And yeah, it's not easy. And then adjusting to light and the temperatures.
Aww.
And all of that stuff. I mean, do you think I'm just on holiday when I go there? Is that what you
not
think?
Not at all. I think you do a lot of work when you're there. I'm saying that even if you're doing a ton of work, it's still a good trip. I'm hoping it is. I've never heard you come back from overseas and say, man, I did not have fun.
That is squarely on me. 100%. I find fun wherever I go. By golly, I do.
100%. And
Some of you can attest to that.
I have been in a company of a lot of that fun. I do not feel any sympathy for you.
Okay, you don't have to.
And nobody should. You do a lot of good work, and you do hard work, and you accomplish a lot of stuff. And you have fun. So there's zero sympathy here.
Yeah. So looking forward to it.
Tim Clark says you need an assistant to travel to Sweden.
Ooh.
That's him.
I've had a few offers, Tim. It looks like I'm going solo at this route. All right. Let's read a few more things off the board. So anyway, those are a couple of post-production things. So as I just got done saying, post-production clearly is going to continue to be a very legitimate vehicle, an asset and tool and resource. It's not going anywhere. I think it's going to grow and expand. In fact, it's just going to be a matter of when live is available. I think some people are going to consume things that way as well, or instead.
Zero Strings asks, how many screens in the control room show camera guys jogging to the next position? It has to be hard to ignore and observe at once. It's easy to ignore.
Yeah, when you see a camera shaking everywhere, the last thing you really want to do is look
focus
at it.
On it.
Yeah.
But I will say, thankfully, I don't see a lot of the cameramen jogging because we're pretty well timed. I have become, I feel, and my cameramen will start going to hate me. I feel like I'm very good at releasing camera two, which is our catch cam, in plenty of time to get to their next position. That is almost my number one focus when we're walking down the fairway is how can I get a camera in position to replace that guy so he can go to the next hole? And sometimes it burns me a little bit because the camera two will be like, dude, I have like a 4 foot walk to the next hole. They have to double back and go so I can stay here after I've already made this plan in my head. Like, okay, if I can get camera three over to this position and then camera two, get him stationary and then one can walk around so two can leave. Like, because I don't want the cameramen to run. That's the last thing I want. They hate running. They've got a ton of gear on them. It's not easy. The last thing you want to hear, you know, when we cut to camera two is a camera guy huffing and puffing. And so I try to make that that is almost my number one goal is when I'm thinking of how can I release camera two as quickly as possible, usually, and still maintain a good broadcast. So I don't see a lot of jogging. There is a lot of walking for sure. We do have one cameraman who likes to run other than Mo. Mo loves to run in general. And I almost yelled at him. I'm like, dude, stop running. A, you make me feel bad. And he's like, oh, I don't mind running. I'm like, no, you make me feel bad. Like I made you late, even though you've got plenty of time to get there. And second of all, I don't want a guy falling and breaking our stuff. So, you know, that,
or his face.
No, I just, if it breaks his face, I don't care. I'm just kidding. No, we just don't want guys running because that it hurts their, it could hurt the equipment. It could hurt them, this and that. So ultimately, I don't see a lot of running. It does happen. I do screw up. Usually like once a round or once a tournament, maybe, where I don't get a guy out in time, or it's an awkward par three where all the, like, for whatever reason, you know, we've got some, like, they're chunking up the fairway and our cameras can't get ahead. And so the camera guy in the catch position is stuck there until I can get a camera up there. But if it's heavily wooded, people are trying to get up there and you just can't get a camera ahead of everybody because we don't want to make the players wait while a cameraman walks down the fairway. And occasionally the camera has to run and I hate it. I feel bad, but I also think that's part of the job once in a great while, but hopefully very little, very little.
Okay. Ray had also asked, do you have backup and redundancy for Mo and Gary O's shop, blah, blah, blah. Johnny's trained some people. Short answer to that is yes. Almost every single job that is done within the Disc Golf network, the entire network of cameras and various camera operators. I mean, at some point we have multiple drone operators. We've got multiple gimbal operators. They do such a phenomenal job of really cross training everyone. Yeah. So that if somebody, you could be catch for lead MPO and the very next round, you might be throw for third feature card of FPO or whatever. So everybody's really become cross-trained. You might have your preferences or kind of your norms, but everybody has, I cannot say it enough how impressive it's been that so many people have this cross-training. And then even within the control room, that's been something that's been a significant focus over the last couple of years, in that there's now multiple people that could do various parts. So if somebody got hit by a bus, which is always my favorite one to go to,
of course.
But if somebody got hit by a bus, there would be somebody else that could likely step in and fulfill any role.
I mean, there are people that are the best at their job. Gary is the best at running replay. He just is. He's done it. He's very quick. He understands. But Gary can also now do directing. He can easily do graphics. Graphics is kind of the beginner, the easiest job in the Pro Tour because the buttons are mostly laid out. You have to push a button when you see a player. The hardest part about graphics is knowing all the players. Like, you know, it's easier to train someone how to do the graphics than teach them all the players. So graphics is usually where someone comes in, kind of gets that under control. And then they go to replay and do that. And Gary usually is very good at training them. We start them off on Silver Series. It's, you know, a little bit slower. Mo, the producer, we've done other producers. Silver Series are being produced by other people now. Tosi, who is our AD, he does a lot of the audio stuff. He balances cameras a little bit more. I still do a little bit of that as well. But he also takes care of all of the assets, as we call them, all the screens. The graphics, those are like the little bugs, that's one guy, but graphics as in the full screens and the scenics and the rollouts, the course close-ups, things like that is Tosi. Tosi can do Mo's job. Mo can do that job. The only job Mo hasn't done is directing yet, but I honestly, I would love to see him do it one time, and I don't want to do any other job. I could do graphics. I might be able to do replay. It would take me a while for replay because replay is very tough. Like, I do not envy anyone stepping into that replay position because you have to be watching a lot of cameras, marking a lot of shots, and being ready for when Mo suddenly says, oh, God, I didn't realize that Paul Macbeth was 20 feet from this basket. Go back and get the drive, and you maybe didn't mark it. So now you need to dig back through your footage and scrub and scrape. I'm like, okay, and Mo wants it literally in seconds. So I don't envy that. I don't ever want to do replay if I don't have to. But a lot of people can do a lot of people jobs. I think we're very cross, as Terry said, cross-trained. Right now, I would say the only thing that I do that can't be replaced is literally the physical building of the devices, the servers. Like, if we've got some big plans coming up for the end of the season, so stay tuned for announcements on that. But when I have to build more servers, someone's like, oh, we need another replay machine because we're training somebody, or let's build this thing right here. I'm the only one right now that can really do that. Speaking of which, I need to do that tomorrow. Sorry, Gary.
Okay, another question that had come in was asking about, Terry, what were you doing for Nate this weekend? We saw you several times on the coverage, but you never, ever gave us a wave or a word.
That's not true. I think I saw a thumbs up from you once.
Yeah, I may have made some silly faces. But yeah, this weekend was really unique, and I definitely explained it a number of times because it was so unique. Just in that, and I think I discussed it last week too, but... I was hired and directly contracted to work with the Ledgestone Open event with Nate Heinold and with the rest of the crew. I had mentioned earlier something about 85 staff members. I was technically one of those, although I never did get my shirt or my shoes, Nate. But
me neither,
I was
Nate.
On staff. Well, you weren't on staff. I was on
me neither,
staff
Nate.
And contracted by Nate. As I tell almost everyone, I am... For what, 30-ish weekends a year, contracted by Disc Golf Network to do various live things. Whether like this weekend, I go to Bend, Oregon, where I'm playing host of the broadcast for all 3 days, similar to what Ian Anderson does, or I'm on site doing similar to what Brian Earhart did this last weekend, where I'm helping run the press conference and then also on-course commentary and sideline reporting. Usually that's what I'm doing for 30-ish weekends or so out of the year, whatever the number is. When I'm not doing that, I'm often working for myself and running post-production for the Disc Golf Guy channel. Usually, like 98% of the time, it's one of those two things, or maybe I'm helping run a tournament or something else, but media-wise, it's one of those two things. This weekend is that 2%, is that unique scenario where I wasn't doing either of those things. I was working directly for Nate as part of the Ledgestone event crew. And you may say, well, why is that? That seems odd. Maybe a little bit, except for there's a longstanding history. Johnny and I, as Smashbox, and myself as the Disc Golf Guy, had worked with Nate for a number of years as doing some form of media within the Ledgestone event. And so I very much have had this tie and this special connection to this event, more so than most of our other events. And it also kind of gives me a little bit of a break, not because I don't enjoy or love the work I'm doing, but it just gives me a different perspective for a weekend. And it's I helped a lot with the Instagram stories, and I did some other things with Nate, worked with Hannah, T-Box. Yeah, it's just a different perspective. And in other years, I've had a slightly different role. So that's what I was doing. I think that answers the question, but it's very unique, and it is not the common practice for events. So it's a very fair question. Also, some of the other things I did, I think about, I was host to the Skins match that took place. Not Skins, sorry. The St. Jude fundraiser event that happened on Wednesday evening. Sometimes I've stepped in to help out with some of the filming for the ace run, for the $10,000 ace throw off. There's just a lot of things along those lines where I can kind of fill in.
What do you think DGN's current biggest deficit? Where do you want the most improvement for next year? Races, you think sound could use more attention, maybe directional mics to catch appropriate moments. I mean, as we know, sound is probably the most difficult thing. Because there are so many variables. I would love slightly better cameras. I'll say this, not necessarily better, more consistent. I want every camera to be the exact same make and model. Every one of them, other than maybe our slow-mo cam and the gimbal cam, because those can't be the same. Because sometimes we're like, right now we work with post-production crews and they have different cameras. And one of the things that they do is they have something, they call it the tentacle. It's like a jammer. It syncs the cameras up, and on one channel, and you'll hear it sometimes, we try to avoid it, but every once in a while when we go to a shot and you hear that annoying noise, that's just deafening. It's because either the camera on their side, maybe put it on the wrong channel. Or on my side, I forgot to mute a channel because I have to mute channel one, because the tentacle is usually everything's on channel. Everything bad's on channel one. Everything good for us is on channel two. One of us has messed it up. because when we do tests in the morning, maybe they didn't have the post-production guys weren't there, so we didn't test their particular camera. I would love it if we could just get rid of those and have consistent cameras and let the post-production guys use the same cameras. I think it's in the long-term plan. I don't know if that's next year or 2 years or 3 years. Directional mics are difficult, just like on-course communication is difficult. You're dedicating an entire broadcast to just audio. I think it would be awesome to have specific audio for like a parabolic mic pointed at whatever player's throwing or the conversation they're having. But yeah, balancing the right audio for, because again, we're using all the same cameras. When the guy at camera six gets done on hole 18 with whatever player he's following, he becomes suddenly the interview camera. And so that's a different set of, it's a different mic. That's different volume levels for interviews than it is for being on the course. We're still a startup. We're still trying to make, you know, do the best we can with the little resources that we have without, you know, we can't just break the budget and get whatever we want, or Sam would be so happy because I think Sam would just love to go to B&H Photo and buy a whole bunch of shit that, you know, he wants. But yes, I think you're right. Audio could always use improvement. I think we're getting much better with Tosi being able to auto level, not auto, but control levels on his side. So if something's a little hot, he can pull it down usually within a second or two. And then replay has different, you know, the same cameras go to replay, go to us, but sometimes I'll adjust my audio and replay doesn't necessarily, like if I push up, if we're listening on camera one to a conversation, I'll push it up and then it'll be louder. And then we go to replay and it's quieter and it's very difficult. Audio is not fun. And any audio engineer will tell you that. And I do not envy their job at all, but I think we do an okay job. I won't even call it good yet. I think we're doing okay with audio. But we're getting there. It's a little learning curve. There are things I think we can add in that Smashbox had years ago that I think could help out. There's a bunch of plugins that take up CPU resources that will do kind of auto leveling to a specific level. But then you run into the issue of, oh, cool, you auto leveled the cameras for background audio, but now you want to try to force them up because you've got conversations happening. So now that the system automatically wants to push it down. But I used to do that with commercials because I would either the night before the broadcast or the morning of, I'd be leveling commercials because every company, even though we send them, hey, we want them in 60 frames per second, 1080p, and preferably at negative 12 decibels or whatever the thing is now. It doesn't matter. A lot of these companies just, they don't understand some of that. They just send you a commercial and it could be in 4K. It could be in, you know, 720, you know, I've seen it. We've all seen it. The commercials that are way too big and they're cut off on the corners because you see the words come off the screen. It's because we were in a hurry or the company sent us the wrong size commercial, or it's super loud and maybe we missed auto leveling it. Or maybe we missed leveling it in general, and now Tosi has to manually do it. It's a lot of work. And you know, there's a reason why, you know, when you go to ESPN, Mo literally would tell me, he's like, yeah, my one job was just to, like, you know, create this one graphic over and over and over, or whatever he did. You know, I had to just pull, you know, this file from this system. We had one person to do one little thing. It's because everyone's specialized, because it's that important these days. But yeah, it's difficult. I would love more attention put to audio, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I don't know what the DGN's biggest thing is. Again, I'm excited for later this year. I think you guys are going to be pretty excited. There's going to be some kind of cool things coming up.
All right. Next up, Scout Recycler asks, anybody know how Paige's documentary is doing on DGN? That would be also kind of a good running follow-up, but I think a little check-in as to some form of update on that.
There
every,
were a few
every week or every other week.
I thought I heard there were at least a few thousand downloads, but I don't know the exact number.
Yeah,
that could be 1,500. That could be 5,000.
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers, and unfortunately, I didn't think to ask. But that would be a good question to have at the ready, possibly for the next few weeks, and then just see also where the progression is and what's going on with it, and just kind of get some kind of a status update. I should put that on actually a set of notes to like ask for some form of status update to report back to everyone weekly, I'd be all about it. We didn't really even touch on the documentary in the regular show or here in the after show. I would be curious to know of your thoughts, what you guys, you know, what you guys thought of it, and if there's any other quick takeaway that we really need to bring up or discuss about it. I really enjoyed doing the Q&A that took place on Wednesday night. Having both the director in Wilson and then having Paige on there, almost all the questions that were read were were sent in. And then I was just kind of literally just poking around at this list of 50 questions and just trying to see one that was like, oh, that looks like a good question, and then ask it. We only got to roughly a dozen of them. And again, there was a little discrepancy. No, there was a little, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. Liberty taken on my part as to, you know, I felt it was much more to ask a question about the documentary that was relatively specific as opposed to, you know, what would you tell a 13-year-old trying to get sponsored? Like, just with relative to the subject matter, yes, if I saw both of those questions back to back, I went with the one that was more specific to the specific to the documentary, and we would have needed another 2 or 3 hours to go through every single question that was in there. So also to just put that out there.
I was told to give you a little bit of a hard time.
Okay.
Mo said that, I believe you guys started at something like 7:55 or something, 8:55. I forget the exact time, but at whatever, 8:40, he said, okay, Terry, wrap it up. And Mo's like, we didn't end till like 9:05 or 9:15.
Yeah, like 20 minutes later. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's like, it was supposed to be like, does he not understand what wrap it up means? I'm like, well,
have you not seen our show?
That's what I told him. I'm like, Mo, you kind of know what you're getting into when it comes to us. He's like, I know, but give him a hard time for me. I said,
that's fine.
I will do that.
He can.
So that is the hard time I'm going to give you, Terry.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, there was a ton more questions, and the conversation from both Wilson and Paige, I thought, was so just wildly enlightening and on point. If I felt like it was dragging on, I would have been more inclined to be like, okay, let's wrap this thing up. I just, you know, to pat them on the back, I thought they were doing just such a great job, and it was really engaging. So that's why I didn't instantly wrap it up on his part. Too bad, Mo. You run it next time. Reading along a few more of them, I'm ready to turn to 2024. Will be the eligible for Masters. I hurt my neck sleeping last week and out of commission for 4 days. Sam, yeah, heal up. I was just saying today that, or thinking yesterday or the last few days, I don't know if I need some major pillow adjustments or what, but my neck's also not been doing well lately.
What kind of pillow do you like? Do you like a big fluffy pillow? No, or do you like a real, like, skinny paper?
No, I hate skinny, tiny little pillows. But the pillow that I used last night was I don't know, it's not memory foam, but like it's thick and firm, and it also still made my neck hurt. And it's not like this is anything new, so I don't know what's going on with my sleeping lately. What I don't like,
because I like,
are some of the really nasty hotels that I've been to where it literally feels like 4 or 5 usually dirty t-shirts are just bundled together and thrown into a pillowcase. I've been to too many hotels that feature that as their form of a pillow, where you pick it up and the way it squishes, it feels like there's, oh yeah, they put like 5 t-shirts in here.
Some old towels.
That's what it feels like.
I generally like a very thin, paper-like pillow with not a lot of padding. Just give me just enough to barely lift my head off the pillow, off the mattress, I mean, and I'm good with that. When I go to a hotel, you know, you go in and there's like 6 pillows on the bed, and all I'm thinking is like, okay, which one is the smallest? That's the goal I go for. Yeah, what is the smallest
pillow?
The other ones I usually like body pillow wrap up.
I like
up
the ones
I
where you put your head down and it like takes a while for them to sink all the way in. Those are the ones I
ain't got no time for that.
All right. Ray is saying, I'm really just forwarding the complaints I heard from Charlie on the Upshot earlier today. I will bridge the gap so Smashbox can react same day. I'm not sure what the complaints were.
Well, these are some of the questions.
Oh, some of the minor delay between the booth and the action. There's about a half second delay currently. Oh, yeah, that's
more than that. It's about a second to a second.
Yeah, I mean, that unfortunately is a much bigger, larger, expensive, challenging fix than anyone probably realizes, because
everyone thinks that you can just
like click a button and delay, like, oh hey, just clap your hands together or something. And
can't you just click delay video? It's like, no, you can't, because if you do that, you literally delay every single thing on video. So every interview, every commercial is off by a second and a half. And on top of that, as I've said, and I don't want to harp on this because I've gone over this 1,000 times, but I know we always have new listeners. The delay between the booth and what they see fluctuates because it's a best serve. So sometimes it might be 200 milliseconds. Sometimes it might be 800 milliseconds. That fluctuates based on the internet conditions. So if Charlie is remote in New York and he's got great internet, awesome. And that's great for them. Brian, on the other hand, maybe is in a hotel room in Des Moines and his internet's not so good. And so his feed might literally be 200 milliseconds off Charlie's. How do you exactly equate the delay for that? Because it will fluctuate, because it could get better. So there are ways, I've talked about this, there are ways to cut down that delay, but they're very difficult and they're expensive and they rely on our commentators being in one spot together. Now that could be one spot in Bend, that could be one spot in New York. It's much more difficult for Silver Series when the people are split up, but I also kind of feel Silver Series, I don't care if the stuff is 2 seconds behind in Silver Series. Because they're Silver Series events. They're literally our second tier events. I want them to be as good as they can be, but we also don't spend the extra money to fly everybody to one location. So we settle for broadcasters that are in different locations that are on a back channel communication that talk to each other so that they can sync up, as opposed to using the web interface. Like, it's just, it doesn't get the resources that the Elite Series get. And I could cut the delay in half if we really, really wanted to spend a little extra money, and I trusted that all the commentators understood how remote desktops work and they could spin up a server and look at it. And like, I would trust Nate Doss to do that in a heartbeat, but I don't necessarily trust everybody to do that. I don't trust Terry.
Nope.
So in general, it's possible to cut it down. It is literally impossible to get it in sync unless the commentators are in the same location as the director, as me. Because that's the only way you have that low of a delay connecting. Anytime you connect anywhere else, even over a fiber connection, you're going to have some millisecond delay. And I think we could get away with up to 400 to 500 milliseconds. That's half a second, and no one would really care or notice. But the way things work right now, that's doubled, because the signal has to go there, and then their audio has to come back. So that could be anywhere from a second to a second and a third. So there are other things I would put my efforts into. And again, you talk to Charlie, you talk to Ian, sometimes I feel like they think that's the number one problem DGN has. That ain't the case. Like, it sucks, but I care, but I don't care enough. I would fix 10 other things before I fixed that. Because you know what? The other thing I said is, guess what commentators shouldn't ever be doing? And Terry sometimes does this, but he's pretty good at it. Philo does this. Ian does this. Other guys do this. They cheer for the fucking discs. Ooh, don't go, don't go, don't go out. And by the time it's out, it's 2 seconds ago. Guess what? A, you shouldn't be cheering for discs in general. No, you shouldn't. You're a commentator. You're in general. It should be an unbiased.
I'm cheering standard for the best possible outcome.
What if the best possible outcome is Paul McBeth going out of bounds to make it a better competition for against Ricky Wysocki coming into hole 18? Nope. So you want the best score.
I want everybody to get the best score possible.
Okay. Well, that's silly. So anyway, you shouldn't be cheering. You should watch what the disc does and then tell me what happened, or tell me the results, or tell me the storyline now. Don't go like, oh, ho, 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 ho. I'm sorry, we're not AM radio. We're not baseball radio where you've got homers. And I love AM radio. Bob Uecker is one of my favorites. But the dude is a homer for the Brewers. That's what AM radio, or maybe FM, depending on your area, that's what the radio broadcasters are for. But I'll tell you what, you don't hear, in theory, Joe Buck cheering for a team.
So should you, and by that, like, same nature, should,
like,
you...
If Aaron Rodgers goes back for a pass and throws it, he's not going, oh, he's going to catch it, No, the dude catches it, he goes, and he scores, and then Joe Buck tells you what happened and how that affects the game in the future. Don't go fucking cheering for shots, because you're going to look stupid when it's already rolled out of bounds and you're cheering or hoping it doesn't.
Well, I understand your frustration with...
And that's part of the 2-second delay.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say,
I understand
more so the frustration when you're saying from a technical perspective of people are seeing what's already happened and then the voice doesn't catch it. I totally understand mm-hmm. that. And ever since learning of the delay, I absolutely try to avoid doing just that. Yeah. Because
you're better at it.
Just like you said, if a disc gets up and skips... And you've already seen at home that it's come to rest, and I'm still, or it's still, whatever. And I'm commentating. I understand all of that. I think there is always an interesting conversation to be had about what is considered bias or unbiased, and like you said, cheering for any given shot
solution or outcome. Yeah.
Like,
I get it. If a disc is rolling and a commentator says, that has to sit down or it's going to go OB.
Mm-hmm.
That's not cheering. That's statement. It's a fact.
Yeah.
But going again, like literally
sit down.
That's cheering. That is some sort of wishing on a result. I don't want to see that as a listener. I don't want a commentator to do that. Now, again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm 100% wrong. Disc golf doesn't have to be like every other broadcast. That's another thing I've told Mo, like, Mo and I, we look at golf, and I watch it for different reasons, listening to their commentators. I don't necessarily think we have to be like every other commentator. We can carve our own path.
Yeah,
if maybe I'm 100% wrong in this, and everybody wants to hear our players root and cheer and hope for the best for all of our players. And, you know, oh, great. You know, it's another blowout. Good for Ricky. You know, maybe that's the chance. Maybe that's what people want, and I'm wrong. I'm fully well to admit that.
No. It's clearly not the case because you could be cheering for any given person and just knowing that there's a percentage of the population that's watching that dislikes that person. So by you cheering for them, you're ticking off that fan or anti-fan or whatever you want to call it. It makes perfect sense. I don't have a problem with what you're saying. I think it makes perfect sense. I think there's probably a fine line, as you're saying, as to what feels like how biased is it when you're saying sit down, don't roll OB.
You're not biased towards a particular player. You're biased towards a result. Like, I get it, because you're going to cheer for everybody. It doesn't matter if the person's in first, second, or fifth.
I'll tell you, you're never going to hear me do something like, oh, that's Missy Gannon. Oh, it's rolling. Oh, sit down. And then Kristen Tatar throws. I'll be like, oh, keep pushing, keep rolling. Like, you're clearly never going to hear me. Because if anything of that nature is said, it's in hopes or thought of the best possible outcome for that given player. But I totally understand what you're saying.
I just, partially it's part of the delay that I think everybody understands now. And I've told every commentator, like, try not to cheer, try not to root for things, because you have to understand a lot of times by the time you see it, it's already happened.
Yeah.
So just think of that, because like it or not, you're going to sound dumb. Someone's going to comment it on Reddit, and then you're going to come back to me and be like, oh, God, we need to get this fixed.
Yeah, why well, we do.
Like, but we don't. Like,
but we should.
Sure, if funds were unlimited.
Of course. I'm just saying, but of course, I understand the challenge.
I also want a new roof on my house, Terry.
Okay.
Just do it. Funds are not limited. Like, it's just...
I,
I actually don't need
that. But if you wanted a new roof, you would work to get a new roof. I wouldn't say, oh, you want a new roof? Well, yeah, put one on tomorrow.
Cool. If I tell
I'm not saying that either, but that doesn't negate that you still need a new roof. Even if funds are limited and you can't do it tomorrow, that doesn't negate the idea that it shouldn't get fixed. It needs to still get addressed.
Sure, and someday.
I still want it to get addressed.
Sure, someday.
I mean, just to say, well, it currently is a problem, and well, it's not my top concern. Therefore, I'm not worried about it getting fixed. I don't know if I agree with that.
True example, my roof. My roof has drippage on one side. It literally has, we put gutters on today. Gutters went on today.
Okay.
I address the situation with what is arguably
a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm. At some point in hopefully 10 to 12 years, my roof will probably have to be fixed and tore off. But for now, it's in good shape. That's how I feel about this problem. Like, cool. Guess what? It works. There is nothing truly technically wrong with it. Is it an inconvenience for some people? But again, like, that's like arguing that our colors in our broadcast aren't perfect.
Yeah. So cool. we would want to fix it.
But if I told you
just got done saying, if I told you like them to all look the same,
I would. But if I told you it's going to be $100,000 to fix that, that's the cheapest we can do it. Like, where does that go on our priority list? Because that's
I don't make the budget.
I know. This is a very, to me, very, very, very low priority issue.
To you. Delay.
Correct. And I don't make, again.
To me, I feel differently.
Yeah, and we don't make the priority.
Exactly. Like, and nor do we write the checks.
No, we don't.
Or pay any of the bills.
Nope,
we don't. So it's somewhat irrelevant. However, I think it's fair to say your priority list of fixes or challenges might look very different from mine.
And our,
you get different criticisms online than I get 100%. Online.
Yep.
So it's fair to say we have different agendas.
The difference is you can fix yours by just literally changing what you do, just by how you speak.
I can address it. I can compensate, not necessarily fix. I can compensate.
Correct. You can make that
to make it better.
You can make it so people don't notice.
Isn't that largely fixing the problem? Bandaging the problem.
That's not fixing it. That's what you say.
Right.
Sure. Haven't I fixed the problem by telling you how to do it without making everyone. Is the problem the 2 second delay or is the problem the commentators? That's in general. All I'm saying is that there is a problem. It can be fixed with a crap ton of money and resources and trying to fix something, or it could be fixed by just me telling you, don't get so excited so quickly.
Yeah, I don't disagree that that's
so there is
one way.
There is a solution.
One way to combat the or address the problem. Absolutely.
Sure.
Or it could be fully fixed.
Cool. It's what I just did. I just plugged a hole in your tire.
Yeah, exactly.
That tire will run for another 10,000 miles.
Is it as good as new?
Not quite as good as new. But guess what? If you can plug a tire, Terry, you're not going to get a brand new tire right away.
Not right away, but I'm going to want to get it fixed.
At some point. You did. You plugged it. Got a nice
I'm going to want to get it like fixed
you
or
get
replaced.
You want to get a new tire.
I'm going to want to get a new tire because that's what you should do.
Sure. But
are you going to want to get a new roof? You might not do it tomorrow because funds are limited. I get it.
I know.
And I'm not saying go out and get a new roof tomorrow. But ideally, you'd like to get a new roof.
Yep.
That's a lot better than putting up a gutter.
Oh, sure.
Whatever you did.
Sure. Yeah, we put up gutters because the we have a flat roof and it was dripping at certain spots. And in order to fix, like, if we wanted a truly perfect flat roof, it technically is supposed to have a touch pitch to it. And then it can drain into the spots on the roof where it's supposed to. But because it would cost me literally, I think they said $30,000 to do that, to tear the roof off the house and put a new flat roof on and everything, we decided that we would pay just, you know, a few grand for gutters. Like, cool, gotta, you know, and just pop some gutters on it where we knew the drippage was. So that'll last 10 years and not, I won't have to think about it. So
yeah,
that's kind of how I feel about this.
We could definitely pass the problem on to someone else.
Oh, I'm passing it on to future John because I'm not moving out of this house. Future John gets that problem. But anyway, so yeah, so there's the 2 second delay. That's my perspective. And I understand for a commentator, it's difficult to not try to immediately react to what you see on screen. And I think that takes training. I think that takes understanding and training. And I think our commentators can do it because I do like, and I think most of our commentators are really good. But as I've said, I've heard this complaint before about the 2-second delay, and everybody in the Pro Tour knows about it. And from my perspective, everyone above me has decided that this isn't an issue because nobody above me has ever asked me about it other than Mo. Mm. And I've explained it to Mo. And the only people that have requested it to get, like, think that needs to be immediately fixed are people that don't make those decisions up there.
Well, so just because higher ups don't agree with the decision doesn't necessarily mean it's the right decision either.
You're right. I agree.
Right. I think the government, for instance, makes a lot of decisions that I think most of the common folk don't necessarily agree with.
Sure.
That could benefit them in a lot of ways.
You're 100% right.
All right. So does anyone know which touring pro ties their cat up to their van? It was a dynamic disc van. Friend cat walked up to me and I gave him some pets.
Friendly cat. Lisa Fakus has a cat, but she's not DD.
Yeah, she's got, and Holly Finley has a cat. She's also not with Innova.
Maybe somebody was cat sitting.
It could have been.
Was it Katrina Allen? Was that the cat that walked up and you were friendly to it? I mean, hi, cat.
No more comments. Jonathan Nicholson has a DD wrapped van, and that's what makes me think that he's the most likely. And then obviously Waisaki's van, which I'm pretty sure you'd pick out. Jonathan Nicholson is the one that comes to mind because I feel like he's the other major DD.
Chris Clemens
van out there. Ah, that's a good one. It could be. I don't know
from Ryan Pilcher.
Is that on his van? Is his van wrapped, or is his van kind of low key? Either way, Chris Clemens might be the cap culprit.
What kind of cat is he?
But Chris Clemens does have a cat. And is on tour and throws DD. Man, I feel like this is a game of Clue or something like that. Live coverage is fine. 2 years ago, improvements are nice, but I don't need any more to enjoy it. Okay. We appreciate your low bar, Carney.
Thanks, Carney. I appreciate that. Like, we're good now. We're good forever.
It's ingrained in disc golf to root for good shots. I'm always rooting for him. I like Dust from Gatekeeper because he has a unique approach to post. Get him on live if you want to be ballsy. And how much did you get paid for the sponsoring?
Just a couple weeks ago, I did recommend Dust for something for live. So
love it.
I don't know if that's going to go anywhere because I don't make those decisions. But I did say, hey, if you're looking for someone to maybe help something out, I think Dust would like a shot.
Yep, there you go.
So shout out if Dust, if you're listening, I threw your name out there for something.
But nobody listens to you.
Nobody knows.
All right. If everything is up and up, why do we have such a long discussion on these various topics?
Topic I need to question anybody on is, are you a Patreon supporter? Because you should be. I give away all of these hot takes, all of these phenomenal insights. Ideas and insights, these A1 suggestions.
Background information,
everything,
breakdowns.
I give it away, give it away now. And if you're not
home tips, home improvement tips to defer your frustrations and costs for 10 years, yeah. Johnny's got those,
yeah, because my roof doesn't leak, so I got no problem with the roof. But anyway, I give all these out for quote unquote free, but you know what? You can pay me for these. And if you're not basically paying me for these, you're probably stealing my information.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So yes. If you're not paying for the podcast at patreon.com/smashboxtv, you're more or less stealing right from Terry. And look at him. He can't afford to be stolen from.
No, so, I cannot miss a meal, folks.
I didn't say that. I just said in general, you can't afford to be stolen from. patreon.com/smashboxtv is where you can go to support this podcast. And so we can do it every week and give you all the insights. So tomorrow that I can do, I'm going to try some auto body work. It's going to be kind of scary.
Oh, geez.
Oh yeah. It's going to be great.
Wow.
Anyway,
folks, this is getting good.
It's going to be good.
You should go live for that.
No, I should not. I'll tell you a little later, but we have 170 people eligible for this giveaway. I have sorted the names. by address. Some do, some don't have address. So they don't have an address, they're at the bottom of the list. If they do have an address, they're at the top of the list, but they're sorted in reverse order of number. So they start with technically an S, because I believe that someone overseas, that's Enzo. And then it goes P.O. boxes, and then a couple other letters, and then all the numbers, 908, 8, 880, all those numbers. So that's how that works. And then at the bottom, it's the people who do not have addresses in the Patreon system. So Terry Miller, we are giving away the box that's on. I think we have two giveaways this week, actually.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah, did we not do one last
week? We did not do one last week because you were not here.
Yep.
So we've got a Patreon giveaway. And actually, you know what? Is there something? Grab that. Grab that. That whole pile right there, Terry. We'll give away two of these items. So one of them is going to be the Disc Member box. Disc Member. And the other, I forget what this disc is. Do I want this one? Oh, yeah, no. We're going to give away this one right here. The other one is going to be this Skyline 2019 Star Wraith signed by all the celebrities that were at the celebrity event. And this is significant. I should have waited until next week because I think the celebrity event is going to drop next week.
Just asked me about it. And I didn't have the answer.
It's because it's supposed to drop in the week, whatever weekend there isn't any broadcast. So I think after Des Moines, but before Worlds.
Yep, that would be next week.
So I believe that's when it's going to drop. So this, maybe it's rightly timed, but maybe not. Mm. Anyway, so you'll get it right in time. So all the signatures on here were the pros. I'm sorry, not the pros, but the celebrities that were at the event. And you can figure out who those are based on their celebrity. Even it's got a DG guy right in the middle.
Oh, my gosh.
Got a DG guy. I have another one, too. I've got this Funky Farms one that I'm keeping for me. Because I'm greedy. And I took the time to have them signed. But anyway, so these two items. The first one we're going to give away is going to be the Disc Member box, Terry.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Disc Member. Terry, what number do we want to pick?
Well, I think, I don't know, I just watched an Instagram, Paul McBeth's apparently also trying to throw pitches at the little game there in...
do we want him blowing out his arm?
Yeah, exactly. At a game and in the extracurricular activities area threw a pitch that got to 82. So let's go with two because that makes a lot of
all
sense.
Right. That's close enough. The first number is 131. Second number is going to be probably lower than that. It is 83.
Oh, so close to the number I said, too.
83. Yeah, you said 82.
Was the speed.
So 83 is David Hurd. Congratulations, David Hurd. You got the Disc Member box.
That a boy, David.
David Hurd. I'm going to write that right on here, David.
Good call.
So I don't forget. David...
Put the date on there. 8/16/2022.
Okay. So now we have another giveaway. We've got the celebrity disc. I will not sign that celebrity disc because I did not participate. And I am not apparently a celebrity. So
No. Wait a minute. Billy Lund's out on the board. Billy, I already called out your name once this year. That was a few minutes ago.
We did.
Or a little earlier. And now you're on the board saying, thanks for the entertainment. Sending love from across the pond.
Good luck.
Good luck.
World Games.
Represent the United States to the best of your ability.
And like I
friend.
Said, if you don't win, don't bother coming home. Just kidding.
Oh, Billy Lund.
Billy. All right. So our next one, Terry, we're going to give away the celebrity disc. So what number should we draw for that one?
Let's go with the third pull.
All right, so our first one is 128, our second one is 117, our third one is 99. Nine times, Bueller. This is, wow, I'm gonna have a hard time pronouncing this name. Kirill Bukowski. I'm going to go with Bukowski. Kirill Bukowski. Thank you, Kirill. We'll get that disc to you. Congratulations.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, so congratulations. I don't think I haven't said that name before, so
no.
I definitely like it. He's a $2 support level, so. Oh, that's what I forgot to do. Ooh, I'm sorry, Marcus Burks. I forgot to update
oh my gosh.
The list. I'm going to do that tonight. I'll update the thank you list. So this is a
special shout out.
Yeah, this is a verbal shout out to Marcus Burke, who is a he's a $10 supporter, and he called me out last week
as he should,
because he was like, I don't see my name on that list, and
son of a
I somehow missed, because I updated it I think a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, and somehow his name didn't get on. I don't know how I screwed up. Clearly, I think maybe I only added the $2 members on that time instead of everyone $2 and above. And I said I was going to do it, but I didn't. So Marcus Burks, first of all, hope all the Burks family is doing very well. Second of all, I'll get your name on there, I promise.
Thank you. Some questions have been asked. I think this is, it was maybe already announced a long time ago. But yes, the Disc Golf Pro Tour finale is scheduled to be again in the Charlotte area, Charlotte, North Carolina. So I don't know if it's the exact same course that we've been seeing for the last couple of years. I would have to assume so, but that's nothing more than a silly assumption on my part. October 13th through the 16th is when you will see the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship. Charlotte is what's listed. Now, Charlotte's got a ton of great courses. Pretty sure it's going to be at the same one.
I heard they're going to do different holes at different courses.
Mm.
So hole
play
one,
like two holes, then travel.
Yeah. So then go to another course, play two holes, go to another course. I hope nobody minds the 3 day round one.
It'll be just fine. So, yes, Charlotte, that's what I can tell you. I don't think I'm scheduled to, maybe I don't know. I might be in the booth. Somebody did ask about, I think we talked about it earlier, but somebody asked regarding, at least this weekend, I can tell you it's myself and Valerie Jenkins. Then in the afternoons, it's going to be myself, Nate Doss, along with Nate Sexton, I believe. So it'll be all of us. That'll be the 3 days of this weekend on the ground. Then that leaves either Brian Earhart or Nate Perkins, but I'm almost 99% positive it's Earhart. So I believe Brian Earhart is going to be out on the course. So that's what you're going to see for the commentary team this weekend. And then for the Worlds, I believe it is scheduled as the same as it was last year, which is Charlie Eisenhood, likely along with Hannah. I'm just going to stop because I don't know. I know I'm not in the booth. I know that much. So to know for sure who is or isn't, I can't speak to that, but I'm pretty sure I know that I am not. So that's all I need to know. I'm going to be there on the course, but I am not in the booth. All right. Cannot be at Hornet's Nest by the city orders. They have another event in the park, big motocross. Okay. You might be right. You might be wrong. I have no idea. You seemingly know more than what I do.
You may be right.
I just
you
know
may
that
be crazy.
It's, yeah. Has Elaine quit yet? No. If so, I did not see, not that I probably would see her letter of resignation, but I think it's already been announced multiple times. So I don't know if it's again back to this comprehension or possibly retention challenge for you, Disc Blaster. But it has been announced multiple times that whatever was scheduled at the beginning of the year in terms of commentator roles and duties. In fact, I think it's even been published somewhere, so I could go find the answer you were looking for earlier. But anyone that had scheduled and was put on the schedule remains on the schedule, including all of our people.
Have you been fired yet?
Not yet.
Me neither.
How is that possible?
I have no clue how we haven't been fired.
Either one of us. That doesn't make sense. I was just going to try and look and see if there was actually there somewhere it's been posted. I know that I've, oh, DGN Live Talent. Here we go. Holy cow. Yeah, I knew it had, this was posted months ago. Wow. And it was actually made very public that it was posted. It's out on the Disc Golf Pro Tour page. It's not
cool.
Exactly hidden. Des Moines. Yep. Brian Earhart. Green Mountain Championship shows Brian Earhart on the course, and then myself and Nate and Val, same thing for MVP. And then the Tour Championship also has me in the booth. So holy cow, it looks like I'm in the booth a lot for the next couple of weeks. And Silver Great. Series special events, so on and so forth. This does not list the... Oh, it does list the world championships. It currently shows me as on course analysis, Ian Anderson in the booth, along with Nate Doss and Brian Earhart. The FPO shows Charlie Eisenhood, Val Jenkins, and Elaine King. So almost exact duplicate, except for last year, I believe, Hannah Macbeth was in the place of where Elaine King is.
Mm.
So that's what you have. Yeah, I'll post it. I'm going to post that on our page. Yes, Charlie's good. Stroking the hole card for slow play. Marshall gives a warning, then the hole card is responsible for speeding up play. I feel that's kind of similar to how golf has done it at one time or another.
I'd be okay with something like that.
Sure. It's funny because it still brings an awkwardness. What if, we'll play pretend here, the hole card is, they're behind, you know, X amount of time to the next card. Marshall comes over and says, hey guys, I'm officially giving your entire card a warning for slow play. You guys are playing too slow. Next time I come over, if, you know, with, I don't know, half hour from now, if you're still this far behind, you're considered playing too slowly and the hole card gets stroked. What happens when three guys play really fast and the fourth guy just takes forever? Or maybe plays normal speed, the three guys, and the fourth person continues to take forever. I mean, what are you supposed to do to that fourth person? Are you still able to individually stroke that person? Or are you just supposed to like go over to their bag and be like, here's your disc, throw?
No, I don't
How does that work?
I don't like the idea of stroking an entire card.
Because what if it's literally one person?
I think that if a marshal is called over, he gives, you know, in our play pretend world, Marshall's called over because of slow play. They notice whatever reason, comes over and warns the card. And then at that point, everybody on that card has a warning. The next time, if it continues, the marshal comes over and monitors who's actually doing slow play. And if you don't speed up when the marshal's there, you get a stroke individually. And at that point, who's the fastest player on tour?
On tour, Michael Johansson.
Michael Joe.
Kind of on tour, yeah.
Michael Joe's on that card. And he gets stroked because we have a very slow player. Or he gets warned because we have a very slow player on. When the marshal comes back, Michael Joe has a warning on him. Whether he likes it or not, even if he's super fast. And if, for whatever reason, Michael Joe has to take a minute for a shot, it sucks. But, you know, and he gets penalized for that, that's too bad. Like, because Michael Joe had the opportunity in the first place to whoever was being slow, if it wasn't him, to warn that person and give them a stroke ahead of time. Because if you warn that person, it'd be interesting to say, if Michael Joe warns the slow player, the marshal then later comes over and says, cool, you're all getting a warning. Does that person who's already been warned then get a stroke? I don't know. It's something that we're going to have to work through and figure out, but I think we'll figure something out. I think over the next couple of years, you're going to see some shifts and changes in how this works out. But yeah.
Yeah. And I'll quickly just add on, because it was such a topic of conversation, obviously last week or last couple
Gannon
of weeks.
Burr was Gannon. Awesome.
Yeah. From what I saw, anytime I was anywhere near Gannon and his card, he was moving outside of the tee shot on the final round of hole one, where I felt like there was like six resets and I'm sure if you timed it, it would have been over. Which just, all I kept thinking is, oh, that's not a good start. That's not a good start. We're on hole one. We're on the tee of hole one.
Yep.
But seriously, I can't commend Gannon enough. Whatever steps he's taken personally to massively, and clearly his play hasn't suffered from it. In fact, I think he was even stated as saying, I feel like it's helped me. I just want to say hats off. Congrats. Please, please keep at it. And that goes to anyone. Very much appreciated. And
you can tell he's trying.
Yeah, clearly. And I've always felt like he does not. I don't feel like he's doing it intentionally. He just loses track of time. And again, intent isn't really the matter at this point. But much, much, much better. And I didn't see every shot of his this weekend. But what I did see was him moving at a very, very you wouldn't call it swift, but no. At a very
normal pace.
Average pace. Yeah. And that by in my book checks out just fine. And the last thing I will quickly say, because it's also consumed so much of the internet in disc golf, I'm the first guy to say I'm usually, and maybe this comes from a very biased position because I'm often in the know. This time I feel like I'm still in the know. So maybe that's why it's easy for me to say this and be dismissive. But the amount of energy spent on people worrying about two grown-ass men being Brody and Paul, worrying about what their beef is, whose drama, whose fault it was, what grade of junior high we're in. And I know I sound a hair hypocritical in the fact that I talk and gossip and know of what's going on within the disc golf community. And I'm in a privileged slash good spot to be that, to be there. And I'd like to think I'm respectful of all the players and the conversations. But by God, people, like the amount of posts this week from people that are so concerned about these two, like, now if something illegal has happened between the two of them or truly like life threatening or some other legitimate issue, and I get it, everybody's curious. I understand curiosity. I certainly do. But by God, the amount of threads started about the beef between Paul and Brody. And
Brody apologized for it on Twitter and said he's going to do better and be above the stuff. And that's great.
I don't even care how they're handling it. I'm now more surprised about the amount of adult men and women, usually it's men, that are so concerned.
I mean, it's
about it.
Fans, Terry. That's what these people are, fans.
I get it.
And that's what you get that in any sport. If suddenly Devontae Adams was, you know,
beefing with Aaron Rodgers,
like, oh, they're he went to a different city. Like that's what all the gossip.
And
would
I
be.
Get it. It's the internet. So as soon
it's
as
not just
as
the
soon
internet,
as one thread dies, it's just like somebody else's. But that's like wow.
It's what people tend to thrive on. I think it's somewhere in our DNA where, you know, you
have to know. I get it. Maybe I'd understand it more if I was more in the dark. I don't know. I just, man, so many grown ass adults wanting to know to spill the tea about what their beef is. I don't know. Okay. That's what I'm going to say about it. I've managed to exactly chime in on zero of the threads. It's just like every other hot topic in the sense that you see one thread, it's got 392 comments. 2 minutes later, another thread starts. How much is just regurgitating? And thankfully, I don't read any of them. I just try to keep on scrolling, but it's the amount of scrolling I have to do. All right.
Yeah, I don't. Whatever.
That's it. So in the after show, I'll tell you guys what happened between the two of them. Just kidding.
It was you. You got between them, didn't you?
Yes. Yes. I am in no way relevant in any of that. yeah. We're going to call it. It's been a long night. Thanks for joining us as always. Busy week over that Ledgestone with a ton of great things going on and champions crowned and recrowned and big checks written and everybody, like we said, moves down I-80 to head over to Des Moines, and we wish everybody the best over there. It'll be fun to be in the booth making the calls this weekend. Johnny will be pressing the buttons, adding more delays to the sound.
I'm going
to
try like a 6-second
add like
delay.
Another.
Yeah, like totally just way off.
Way off. Way that off. Would be good. But we appreciate you guys for joining us. Thank you to our Smashies for tuning in. And thank
I'm just
you
hoping I have a drivable car. I'll tell you about it like at the end of tomorrow. So we'll see what happens.
All of our Patreon subscribers and supporters, we love you guys even more. We appreciate it. Thanks for sticking with us on a long night here. And looking forward to seeing you guys this weekend. For Johnny, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. We'll see you next week when you step inside the Smashbox.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.